Greetings. Welcome, everyone. My name is Dan Stultz. I will be your host today on another episode of TechNet Radio. You can reach me on my blog at itproguru.com or email me at itproguru@microsoft.com. Today, we're continuing our Data in the Cloud multi-part series as we talk about running SQL Server workloads in Azure Virtual Machines. Make it a point to stick around to the end of the show as we've got some great tips for you. And I'm going to, my guest today, thank you for joining us today, is Silvano. Silvano, welcome.
Thanks, Dan, and welcome everybody to this great show.
So maybe for those that didn't catch the rest of the series, maybe we can just start with I know you've done this a couple of times already, but let's just do a quick intro, let people know about you and what you do.
Sure. I'm part of the Azure Custom Advisory team, and I work with customers and partners deploying the most complex solutions into Azure, and I'm particularly focused on the data tier. I was a former member of the SQL Server Custom Advisory team, so I have a lot of experience running SQL Server workloads on premises, and now since a couple of years ago, I'm completely focused on cloud deployments for relational and non-relational technologies. So especially in this on this particular subject, I was a co-author of a white paper around deploying SQL Server on Azure virtual machines and the performance optimization and performance tuning activities in this particular subject.
So, I think this is actually a great topic because, not too long ago, a lot of people were really worried about, running a really critical workload like SQL Server, even in a virtualized environment. They wanted it running on raw metal and, get the most power that you can out of infrastructure. And we've gone through that stage of really recognizing that we can have equivalent and sometimes even better performance even running virtualized. So that I think that move to the cloud might not be nearly as bad as it was moving from on bare metal to the virtualized infrastructure. But now maybe we can talk about some of the critical aspects of running SQL Server in an Azure virtual machine.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the critical aspects at the end of the day are pretty much the same. If we talk about SQL Server running on the bare metal level or in VMs running, for example, in Hyper-V on Windows Server or in Azure. So and pretty much, I would say most of these topics are exactly the same, no matter what. Relational database technologies we are talking about, right? It's not just SQL. If we're talking about Oracle or if we're talking about MySQL, for example, I would say that 90% of the concepts that we are talking about are exactly the same. Because at the end of the day, a database server, requires a number of critical factors, to consider. There's on one side, probably the most important one is the storage tier. Planning, the appropriate storage configuration in order to support, the I/O patterns and I/O workload that the relational data engine is generating is super critical. Of course, the amount of memory that is available to cache, into buffer pools, database pages that are accessed by the application queries is another critical aspect. And at the end of the day, also the CPU capacity that is available in the whatever physical or virtual environment is another critical aspect. At the end of the day, database engines are using these three components in order to process application workloads. So I think we need to start considering these three aspects and what the cloud or virtualized environment can provide. There's a lot of literature out there that is talking about some of these aspects in the traditional world, in traditional on-premises deployments. There's the amount of documentation and best practices and guidance is starting to grow also in terms of virtualized and cloud environments. So I think for you know those interested in deploying SQL for in Azure Virtual Machines, we will have a number of great you know links and pointers that we can share and where customers can start with in order to understand these critical aspects more in details.
Great. So as we start moving SQL Server workloads into Azure Virtual Machines, I know there's a lot of different configuration options, and maybe we can just take a couple minutes to talk about some of those.
Sure. As I was mentioning before, I would start probably by picking up the right VM type and VM size that we have currently available in Azure. Right now, there are three different VM types that we announced on Azure. The traditional A-series VMs that are, the one that we first, introduced in the Azure environment. And inside each series, we have a number of different performance levels and configurations that are available. In general, depending on what kind of workloads we are talking about, it's important to pick up the size, the VM size that can actually support, that kind of workload. Of course, what we are suggesting is if it's a dev and test environment, for example, you can definitely use whatever, size is kind of available and whatever type is available. It's super important in that case that you will evaluate, the costs of running, your dev and test environment. But I would say it's not super critical from a performance standpoint that you are picking up, the biggest, size available just, because you are not running a real production environment on top of that. For production environment, we are typically suggesting to start looking at the VM size that is multiple virtual processor or CPU cores available. So starting from 2 or 4 procs and an amount of memory that is matching or is compatible with the database size that we are talking about. That's the kind of first. Kind of rule of thumb that we are suggesting to customers, but it's even more important to start considering some of the new capabilities that we recently introduced. For example, the D series that we announced a few weeks ago is providing, for example, local SSD based storage capacity, and this is super important for certain portion of our database workloads. Things like, for example, the TempDB. Or things like increasing the buffer pool size in our database instance by relying on what we call buffer pool extensions in SQL Server 2014. So the ability to host a part of the buffer pools of our SQL Server instance into this local low latency high throughput storage is a way, for example, to be able to host in our SQL Server instances data sets, active database portions that are bigger than what the memory size that our Azure VM is actually offering. So it's a good buffer again to be able to reduce the amount of latency that is actually happening between the memory part of our SQL instance and the disk part that is hosting, our database files. So again, picking up the right series is definitely, the first step. We just announced during TechEd Europe the what we call G series, where G stands for Godzilla, and this means that we will be able actually to host in Azure VMs, I would say the biggest workloads that are actually, available in the market with VM sizes that are up to 32 cores and alpha terabyte of RAM. So this definitely means that we can cover from these dev test scenarios where, a single core machine, very cheap, is actually, running the doing a great work up to the biggest workload that we have in our organization supported by a single VM. So the VM types and size is super important. From a storage perspective, storage is definitely another key part in terms of configuring our SQL Server instances running in Azure VMs. Today, we have Azure Blob Storage, Blob Storage hosting VHD files that are actually representing our volumes, our NTFS volumes in Azure VMs. What we can do today is to attach a number of these volumes to our VM instances, and each VM size, depending on how many cores this provides, basically, we can attach a number of disks. The ratio that we have available today is two disks per core. In fact, with the Azure VM A-Series, for example, if we take an A7 VM, A7 is an eight-core VM, and we can attach up to 16 of these VHD files that are exposed as NTFS volumes in our VM. If we take, for example, D14, that is another VM size that we have available in Azure, this has 16 cores, and you can attach up to 32 VHD files. And this means that you can basically define how much disk space you have available for your VM, but you can also define how much disk, bandwidth and throughput, because each of these data disks will have a well-defined amount of IO operation per seconds that they can execute, and a well-defined amount of megabyte per second in terms of bandwidth that can exchange with the VM. So by combining a number of these attached disks to our VMs, we can actually do the traditional capacity planning exercise and make sure that our SQL Server workload running in that VM will have an appropriate amount of IOPS and megabyte per seconds to support the database operations. So again, Windows Server, if we talk about the operating system itself, is providing a great feature for storage that is called storage pools or storage spaces that is giving us the ability to stripe a number of these volumes into a striped volume that can offer, from an application perspective, from a database server perspective, a better performance compared to the single disks that we have. So again, defining how many disks we need and how to stripe these disks into a volume that will be used by our SQL Server to host the data files and log files, this is exactly the kind of configuration option that is required for the storage tier in our VM deployment. So these are pretty much the critical aspects that we need to consider when we are going to deploy a new database instance on Azure SQL on Azure VMs.
So from a capacity standpoint, I mean, you talked about developing the capacity based on what you have or what you are going to immediately need. But whenever you do that deployment, whenever you do that build, whenever you create that virtual machine, I'm guessing you probably want to create it from the standpoint of what you think you're going to need long term, and then you can always scale back. Or should it be the other way around, where you just create a small and build up to what you need? I'm thinking you want to go big and then scale down.
There's a lot of flexibility here. If you are moving an existing application from on-premises to the cloud, you can definitely monitor the amount of resources that your on-prem deployment is actually consuming. So you can monitor things like performance counters in your on-prem environment and see, for example, how many operation per seconds or what the amount of megabyte per seconds that are exchanged between my SQL Server instance and the on-prem storage, depending on the kind of storage that we are using on premises. And then you can do your capacity planning in the cloud based on the data that you just collected from your real on-prem environment. But some other times you just don't know what your what your requirements will be in the cloud. So what you can do is to start with a rule of thumb by attaching a number of disks and creating your storage configuration. But you can always over time attach new disks up to what the VM size that you are talking about can support, and provide new storage capacity to the database. The database instances that we are supporting. So this is definitely kind of a flexible process. And over time we'll discover that we are reaching the amount of capacity that particular VM size can provide. You can always decide to scale up and to move to a more powerful VM size, and without actually changing your SQL Server configuration, your VM configuration, you will benefit from an additional amount of kind of horsepower in your instance, and be able to support a bigger workload without necessarily redeploy a new instance or reinstall SQL Server or reconfigure your databases and so on and so forth. So yes, it's definitely a flexible approach.
So you're making it sound really super easy, so I have to ask the negative question. Sorry about that. So what are some of the issues or blockers and maybe some workarounds that I need to think about when it comes to capacity planning, and or I've put it on a large machine and I realize I should be on something bigger. What are some of the issues that I'm going to have to deal with, and how do I plan against those?
Well, the most important topic that I think we should talk about is the fact that as of today, the Azure storage system that is leveraged by Azure VMs is behaving in a slightly different way compared to the traditional on-premises storage systems that we know and love. If we compare, for example, direct attached storage in a classic SQL Server deployment on premises. What we typically experience is that on-prem you typically have a lower latency between your SQL Server bits and the disks that are actually hosting the database files. So it's easy, and we also have very specialized hardware components on premises, things like Fusion I/O cards, SSD disks, and enterprise grade kind of storage that is providing sub millisecond latency characteristics, very very high throughput and bandwidth and so on. Azure storage is instead a general purpose storage system that is highly available because it's replicated, data replicated three times. You can also geo-replicate data to a different, data center in a kind of a transparent and automatic way. But between your SQL Server bits, your code and your data, latency is typically higher than compared to, for example, direct attached storage. So this means that your application code or your SQL Server queries may be impacted by this slightly higher latency, and this latency may impact some query response times. So it's important to evaluate when we are moving workloads to the cloud, if and how this higher latency can impact the database response times, and if the application can tolerate or not these increased response times. And sometimes what we are seeing is that by adopting some very, unintrusive changes to the application code, like, for example, adopting batching, so trying to reduce the number of round trips, for example, that the application is doing when the application is touching data, this is greatly improving or reducing, the impact that this additional latency that we have between our database machine and the data and where the disks are stored is basically eliminating this kind of drawback that we can have in the cloud. We are also introducing, and this has been announced again a few weeks ago, we are introducing a new premium version of the Azure Storage that is going to be based on high-performance SSD disks behind the scene, and we'll have an optimized VM types, in order to fully benefit from this reduced latency. And this means that basically, by moving to the premium storage in the next future, we will be able to run our database workloads with pretty much the exact set of characteristics that high-performance direct attached storage is providing on-premises. So yes, for today, we need to take care of the storage subsystem that we currently have on Azure, and this is probably the most important kind of suggestion I can give to the audience. But at the same time, looking forward, we will have this premium storage that will give you even more capacity than what most of the traditional on-premises storage systems have today on-premises.
So if I could just kind of spin that a little bit, I think SSDs are awesome, and being able to have that as a premium service is great. And I recognize that there's a lot of things that you can do to optimize the workload for running on Azure to get rid of some of those latency issues. So my question really revolves around, and I know this is largely a Azure VM discussion, but is there a possibility of leveraging other technologies inside? If I'm running Azure in a VM, are there other technologies like with the sharding that I can get out of running Azure under the web services? Can I use those technologies too, or am I, if I'm running in a VM, I'm stuck with the technologies that are built into the VM and the VM platform and SQL and the SQL platform?
Well, the point here is that as we are running in a VM and on the Azure platform, we will always have some degrees of constraints compared to a traditional on-premises space, where you can customize, you can configure your hardware environment the way you like, the way you need. Things like, for example, adding a very specialized storage card directly inside the database server, making sure that you are dramatically reducing latency and have a kind of an infinite throughput and bandwidth available. So this kind of very specific improvements will not be easy to introduce in the cloud, because the cloud is exactly the opposite. So running on standard hardware, not super specialized, but that can provide the right cost and performance ratio actually to both Microsoft and our end customers, right? But still, there are a number of optimization techniques that we can adopt with the existing and with the upcoming features like premium storage that can provide the ability to tune the workload and basically be able to match what the application and the solution that we are working on is requiring in terms of performance. So yeah, I mean, the tweaks may be limited compared to the traditional on-prem space, but we still have a number of knobs and options that we can use to kind of optimize the database portion of our solution workloads.
Awesome. So let's talk about a little bit about monitoring and maintaining the SQL Server instances. Again, we're talking about, we've talked in other sessions about those technologies kind of overall, from an overall standpoint, but when we're talking about specifically SQL Server running in Azure VMs, can you go into a little more detail there?
Yeah, I mean, monitor a SQL Server instance running on Azure is actually involving a number of familiar technologies and tools that DBAs and developers and system administrators have used over time on Azure. So starting from monitoring single query execution by for example, observing query execution plans or leveraging dynamic management views to understand, for example, the most important blockers or wait states that are actually impacting our query execution. These are these kind of techniques and tools are exactly the same that we were used to in traditional on-premises SQL Server deployments. When we move into monitoring the operating system that is actually running our SQL Server instances, again, with Azure VMs, we have the entire set of monitoring tools from performance counters ETW traces, whatever we are using on-prem is still applicable. What the cloud is offering is a platform where we can actually take all these diagnostic sources collect this diagnostic information into a centralized repository. For example, Microsoft Azure Diagnostic, that is the infrastructure that we can now use with both Azure VMs and the cloud services, starting from, for example, the latest release that is in the Azure SDK 2.5, is giving us the ability to collect these diagnostic sources from the tens or the hundreds of VMs that we have running in our environments and collect these diagnostic data into a single repository that is actually Azure Storage. So in blobs and tables inside Azure Storage, we can collect this amount of data and then use analytics tool like Excel or Power BI in order to correlate data coming from the operating system, coming from SQL Server environment, and coming from our specific application queries whenever we want to, for example, understand query response times or other details. So yeah, the with SQL Server running in Azure VMs, we have the familiar environment that DBAs and developers knows and love, in conjunction with the great characteristics of the Azure platform can provide in terms of monitoring and managing large number of Azure instances. Simplify the job for DBAs and SIS administrators.
Yeah, and whenever you say common tools and tools that DBAs and developers understand and love, I want to make it just super crystal clear, because I did a couple of blog posts on SQL, and particularly with the newer version, and literally adding to the drop down menu move database to Azure right there in the console, right? It's not like it's a new tool that, and we're making this stuff up. It literally is the same tools that we're using to administer this stuff. So I think we've just done an incredible job, whether it's backing up to Azure, moving to Azure, managing Azure and all of that stuff, literally the same way we've always done it. It's just absolutely fabulous. And I know as we start collecting some of those analytics, we can do some really interesting things with troubleshooting performance issues and stuff like that. I totally get that. Are there some best practices that we should be following in this world where we're running SQL Server on an Azure VM?
Yeah, as I mentioned at the beginning, my team is part of our job is to actually collect all this great experience working with customers and partners and share this experience through white papers, blog posts, and so on.
That's
and
right.
we created last year, if I remember correctly, this white paper that is all about performance tuning and best practices around optimizing SQL workloads running on Azure VMs. And I think this is the perfect pointer to folks that are interested in understanding these best practices, things like how to design and provision the optimal configuration for storage in an Azure VM. What are the different nuances in terms of, for example, disk striping, disk file placements for SQL Server databases, leveraging compression, for example, in order to reduce IOs and again the impact, the latency impact that I was mentioning before, a number of these learnings basically came from the engagements that we have done with real, you know, real world customers, you know, big deployments of SQL Server in Azure, leveraging, for example, Always On for high availability, for local availability, but also for, you know, disaster recovery, cross data center deployments, and you know, other complex scenarios like these. So I definitely encourage, you know, the audience to take a look at the white paper and you know, go through all these best practices. This will be very, very helpful for whoever is trying to deploy SQL Server in Azure VMs.
And I'll put a link to that white paper up on the blog post accompanying this video. So that's great. Thank you for doing that. Let's talk a little bit about high availability and, you know, disaster recovery configurations. I know that's going to be on everybody's mind that looks at moving SQL Server into Azure VMs.
Yeah, we do have a number of options available here. We all know that, you know, apart from, again, dev and test environments where you can actually tolerate, you know, some downtime and so on, we definitely suggest, you know, for each production environment deployed on Azure to have, you know, one of these high availability, you know, deployments in place. It's not about data durability, because again, our database files will sit into Azure Storage VHD files, Azure Storage blobs, and these blobs are replicated, as I said, you know, three times. Okay, can also be replicated, you know, in a different data center from a storage, pure storage perspective. So our data will be safe, but the service itself could be compromised by the fact that, for example, this single VM will maybe go through maintenance. You know, it may happen some host maintenance, you know, events, or some guest maintenance events. So we need to basically put in place some high availability configuration in order to make sure that our applications will be able to access our database services. So Always On is, you know, starting from the previous SQL Server version, is definitely our primary high availabilities and disaster recovery offering in SQL Server. And we do have in Azure VMs all the you know, capabilities in order to deploy Always On clusters. So we know Always On is depending on Windows Server failover clustering services, we do have a lot of best practices and guidance in order to, you know, how to implement Always On clusters, both you know, relying on, for example, you know, synchronous local replication in order to for example, make sure that our transactions are committed in our primary, you know, this will be replicated, will be present immediately on our replica, but we can also, you know, leverage, you know, the asynchronous behavior of, again, asynchronous replicas in Always On, and for example, to store replicas in different data centers, making sure that you know, we can basically support and tolerate even, you know, the entire data center failover for whatever reason. So from a topology standpoint, we can cover pretty much every availability and disaster recovery configuration that we can actually do on-prem. Yes, there are still you know, some caveats to consider. One, for example, is that as of today, we cannot have multiple, for example, availability group listeners configured for a single availability group. This is possible on-prem, and this is currently not possible in Azure, although the SQL team and the Azure teams are working on that. But again, apart from some, you know, very small, you know, differences and changes, we can actually implement whatever topology you know, we need in terms of high availability and disaster recovery. And we should not forget that other high availability technologies and approaches are still available when we are running SQL on Azure VMs as well. Things like mirroring, for example. Yes, you know, SQL Server team announced the, you know, deprecation for database mirroring in SQL Server, But this doesn't mean that the technology is not there and is not supported and fully, you know, usable today for simpler, you know, high availability requirements, for example. And database mirroring also provides a number of benefits. For example, it doesn't require a Windows domain. It doesn't require necessarily a VNet. And, you know, a number of other benefits that can be interesting for customers that needs simpler high availability scenarios. Or other techniques like, for example, log shipping. These are actually valuable options that depending on our requirements, can be still, applicable to achieve highly available and disaster recovery solutions on Azure.
Awesome. So we've talked a lot about new investments already announced with the G Series and the premium storage, and those are great. Are there other things that you want to talk about in terms of the new investments or futures of Azure, or really anything that I haven't thought to ask you yet that you'd like to share?
Well, there are. So of course the goal here is to be able to remove all the possible, you know, kind of barriers that are still existing in moving workloads to the cloud. One of these that immediately comes to my mind is as of today, we are not officially supporting, for example, failover clusters on Azure VMs. So if you want to deploy, if you need to deploy SQL Server in a traditional failover cluster in Azure, this is not possible today. I know the team, both SQL team and Azure teams, are working to enable this scenario. That is a showstopper for some customers today that are moving existing application. Think about Bistalk Server, for example. To deploy Bistalk Server in a highly available configuration, Windows failover cluster is required today. So. We are working to remove all these blockers. For sure, things like premium storage will definitely be, you know, the kind of big improvements that will provide, you know, the great characteristics to support whatever type of workload in Azure that today is not possible with the standard Azure storage offering that we have. So I think premium storage will definitely be a key in order to move every workload, actually every SQL workload in Microsoft Azure.
Awesome. And one other point that I'd like to make, kind of along that same lines, is running SQL Server in Azure VMs, it really isn't any different than running SQL Server in a virtual machine, right? So even small businesses, startup businesses, if they don't have any high-end expertise, they don't need any high-end expertise. They don't need, you know, a boatload of extra training. Yeah, it's nice to have that so you can have, the capability of moving up and taking advantage of newer and greater technologies. But particularly for the smaller businesses and startups, it's an excellent solution.
Yeah, definitely. And again, in terms of removing, you know, entry barriers, making sure that more and more customers, especially the ones that, as you mentioned, you know, are coming from, you know, small companies, small businesses, and so on. We are trying to make, you know, the cloud, you know, the adoption of SQL Server in Azure even more easy. Easier. Things like, for example, you mentioned the ability to migrate a database with a right click on your on-prem SQL Server Management Studio, and let the tool itself to automate a number of behind the scenes kind of activities that are actually required, configuring the VM, configuring the storage, and so on. Things like backing up an existing database on premises into Azure in a totally automated fashion. Things like adding a new replica, a new always-on replica from an existing on-premises instance to the cloud in a kind of a transparent way. These are all improvements that we are adding to the management tools, you know, to the product itself, making sure that you really don't need, you know, kind of a master degree just for adopting the cloud for your relational database workloads.
Awesome. Now, at the beginning of, we're at the end of our time, but at the beginning of this session, I had mentioned that there's some pretty awesome capabilities for startup businesses or people that want to start their own business even to gain some access to some of these Azure services. There is a program called BizSpark for new businesses that qualify, and I've set aside 1,000 codes for this program for companies that do qualify. And if they go to aka.ms/clouddatafree, they can sign up their new business or their startup business and get $150 worth of free Azure a month for an entire 3 years, along with some other software and some lots of other benefits. So not only are they making it easy to migrate those loads and make it easy for them to consume those services, but particularly for that small business market, those startup companies that are doing software development or, you know, creating devices and stuff like that, they're making it free, so or a good chunk of it free. So that's pretty awesome as well. I also wanted to mention that, you know, from a learning standpoint, there is a lot to learn. And it's not that you have to learn it today or you have to even learn it tomorrow, but I want to encourage everybody to go to, like, Microsoft Virtual Academy. They can get there from aka.ms/clouddatamba. And also, you know, I mean, I'm gonna put the links to your white papers and a bunch of blog posts that I've done and some MBA content. We'll put all of those links into the blog accompanying this video. But there's a lot of stuff, and you know, start now. Everybody should just get started now. You know what I do? I'll tell you what I do. I block off on my calendar an hour every day to learn technologies. But I can't do it during my normal day, so I end up going to the office an hour early, and I chunk out, you know, I block out that chunk of time. Now, I don't always get to it every day, but, you know, whatever works for them, I would encourage everybody to go do that. And finally, the rest of the series. This is a multi-part series. To see the rest of the videos that are part of this series, they can go to itproguru.com/clouddata. And with that, I'll wrap and just say, you know, Silvano, thank you so much for joining us today, and looking forward to using some of these technologies that we talked about. Thanks.
Thanks to you, Dan, and thanks to all the folks that attended.